Hey, everybody. It's Ayaz Akhtar here, and this is episode two, or I don't know, but it really is an episode two of this Inner Peace show that I'm trying out on the guys from Queens Network. This show is called Quest for Peace. And yes, it's based on Superman 4 as a title. We're not talking about nuclear disarmament. We're talking about just trying to figure out how to be just content and calm. Now, a lot of folks, if you've known me before, you might have seen me on other networks, and I come off really intense, and I am really intense. And one of the things I've been trying to do for the past, now it's been about 4 or 5 years, is trying to figure out how to be content with things, just to be happy. Because one of the things I used to do when I was a student was I was always trying to get my degree or try to get a high grade. Or if I was trying to be in the podcasting world, I was always trying to get more audience members, or I was trying to do something. Always there was a goal. But once you get the goal, or you receive that item, you kind of go, well, now what? What's the next thing I do? So I was running into this a lot. So I've been thinking about it for some time. And what I'm doing on this program is I get to ask people what they do to stay calm. And today we've got the nicest guy in technology, Tim Stevens, who joined us today for because I have incriminating pictures of him. Tim, how's it going?
It's very true. They're very, very embarrassing pictures, and I hope that they never leak out. I hope that they weren't on Kickstarter, since that Kickstarter's been hacked now.
Yeah, it was on probably Kickstarter and Comcast, because apparently that got hacked too. That was
go figure.
All right. So, Tim, you seem to be one of the calmest people I've ever met in my whole life. And I've met a lot of people. I've met some chill people. But Tim Stevens has got a reputation. If you ever read anything about this guy, first, actually, I should ask you, could you introduce yourself to the audience, and if they've never heard of you before, other than, like, who's this random other bearded guy? They probably want to know your past.
My name is Tim. I'm born and raised Vermonter, which I think probably has some aspect into the calmness. It's a bit of a more laid-back state than your average state. Have been in the technology world for a long time now. I have a degree in computer science and did a lot of programming for a long time. But I've always had a love for writing and a love for journalism. And I've been doing freelance writing since college. And then a couple of years ago, got the opportunity to go full-time at Engadget and was the automotive editor there for a while. And then went to be the editor-in-chief of Engadget. And now I'm at CNET working with you, good sir, and we're having a good time there. So technology journalist, doing the odd media appearance, writing about car stuff and tech stuff, and trying to have a good time and trying to, you know, bring everybody else along so that they can have a good time whenever I get to go play with a cool new phone or a new car or a motorcycle or whatever else.
Now, Tim and I have a lot of parallels, actually. I know, Tim, you have two dogs. Have a beard. I have two dogs and I have a beard. I've lived in Vermont for about 3 years, 4 years of my time. Spent the first 18 in New York. So that might have, I mean Queens, New York. So maybe that might explain the vast differences in attitude, perhaps. But we got to talking a while ago. How is it that you are just so incredibly calm? Do you meditate? Do you, I don't know, you're like a duck and everything's like water to you, just goes off your back. How do you exactly come off that calm? It's fascinating to me.
Well, I think perspective is the most important thing, and it's important to be able to put everything in its context and see how everything really relates to you and basically how that's going to impact you. But of course, that's not necessarily an easy thing to develop or to have. But yeah, I'd say probably the strongest force there has definitely been meditation. I've been meditating since I was, I can't even remember, but my dad, when I was a kid, used to have these like self-help meditation tapes that he would listen to all the time. And for whatever reason, they kind of fascinated me as a kid. And I'm talking like, you know, 10 years old. So I used to listen to them too. And it just sort of developed this concept of meditation for me. And so as a kid, I would do it on and off. And then when we moved actually from Vermont to New York, that was a pretty traumatizing experience for me in high school, you know, going from a tiny little school with people who I'd grown up with to this massive school full of people who, you know, I didn't know and were very hostile to me. So at that point, meditation definitely helped a lot because I was, again, able to kind of put myself at peace and see what was going on and have a little bit better perspective about things. And on and off, meditation has been a huge help for me for sure. That's probably the biggest thing that helps me to get perspective. And I really think the perspective is the key here.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right when it comes to perspective. It seems like when when frustrations happen in the course of a day, they seem to be the biggest, worst thing in the world. And then you realize, no, it's not that bad a thing that I always like to think of it as like stubbing your toe. Like it might feel really painful right then and there, but in the big span of life, it's this small event that just doesn't seem to give that much energy. One of the things that people always thought about me is that they thought I hated everything. And I told them, no, that's just not true, because that takes a lot of energy. I don't have that kind of energy to hate, because that just, you know, got to be like really raging against, you know, like, oh, I don't like this Batman toy, so I'm going to get angry at it. But that just, that's like a waste of time. So you've gotten perspective. How do you deal with frustration? I mean, I'm sure there are times where you're writing one of your articles, let's say a tech retrospect, or you're writing something about a Corvette. By the way, super jealous that you got to drive the new Vette. What do you do when you reach that frustration point?
I guess it depends what's going on. I mean, there are minor points of frustration, like you mentioned, like stubbing your toe, and there are cases where, you know, being frustrated is a little bit helpful. You know, you can use that as a bit of motivation. You know, if I screw up, I might get frustrated at myself if it's something within my control, so that the next time if I get in that situation, I might do a better job. Like I was actually just out racing a little while ago, and you know, I made plenty of mistakes and I got frustrated at myself. But, you know, being frustrated at yourself and using that as motivation to do better is different from being frustrated at yourself and then using that as kind of like a steamroller thing where it just gets bigger and bigger. You get more frustrated, you keep making more mistakes. And you know, I guess, again, it comes back to perspective of knowing, you know, where do you draw the line? Where do you step away from that frustration? And where do you basically see this is not productive, this is not healthy, this is not really doing me any good, so therefore I need to come at it from a different angle, or I need to, you know, I need to change my perspective on this issue that's bothering me. And I hate to be talking kind of broad, vague terms, but ultimately, you know, we're talking about kind of general terms and general problems in general. Like, you know, imagine you're driving home and you're late and somebody cuts you off and then you get mad. So then you might cut off somebody else. And it's one of those things that, you know, that frustration isn't really helping you. And it's, if anything, it's contagious, because now everybody else around you is frustrated because you're driving like a jerk. But if you slow down and if you let that guy in front of you, instead of forcing him to cut you off to get in to that exit, now you're much more relaxed. That guy's more relax because he was able to merge without problem. And overall, everybody's happier because you're not really adding to the frustration of the situation in general. And I think that's an important thing.
I definitely heard that example before, that it's just basically this snowball effect, or more like, I guess, a ripple, that when one person's angry and the next person gets hit and the next person gets hit, there's going to be this chain of events that's going to cause a lot of frustration for other people. And that one moment of being nice could actually change things for lots of people. I was just reading something, like, I don't know if it was on Twitter or something silly, but it was like, just say thank you to the bus driver when you leave. It actually makes a difference. It just, when it comes to this, for me, it takes me a while to realize, okay, wait a minute, you've gone too far down. Like, this, you know, this, I'm frustrated with something going on, and it's like, it starts eating at me. And then my idea is, you know what, it's not that big a deal, but it just stays there. How do you stop this item from staying in your brain and eating at you? Because that seems to be the thing that undercuts me most, is it just sits and then it'll wait. And then one day it'll just come back. It doesn't seem like it goes away.
Yeah, it's tough. And it depends on the situation. If it's a work-related thing, then, you know, it's one thing. If it's a personal issue, if it's, you know, somebody you love who's done something hurtful to you or something like that, you know, there's no one solution. But ultimately, for me, I guess the important thing is to try to quantify this stuff as much as possible, which isn't always possible. But, you know, whether it be, you know, if it's a big, huge task at work and I'm frustrated at myself because, you know, it's not going as I want it to go, then I might just break that up into smaller tasks and write them down and kind of figure out exactly how I need to get at this. But in general, I think the act of simply writing something down, whether it be a personal problem or a work problem or anything like that, you know, if you have it stored somewhere, if you can kind of get it out of your head, if you can kind of break out of that cycle of keep, you know, tripping over it again, like you mentioned, I think that can be very helpful. I mean, obviously, that's a kind of a key productivity thing where you're making lists of things to do, but it also applies to just general frustrations. And if you can, you know, come up with an external storage space, I guess, for these sorts of things and get them off of your mind and out of your head, I think that, if anything, that'll help to give you a bit of a broader perspective on those things and maybe come up with a better solution for them so that you can actually either fix the things that you can, or the other important part is, you know, addressing and acknowledging those things that you can't fix. And then at that point, it becomes a challenge of simply moving on. And that's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, that's why I used to have giant whiteboards up everywhere. I would just I'd grab a dry erase marker, and just write out whatever my brain was just fixated on, try to come up with solutions and quantifying it and saying, okay, if I believe A to be true and that's making me feel bad, maybe A is not true. Prove it wrong. Just basically doing logic proofs, you know, that kind of thing. And it usually works. Mm-hmm. But like, it's such an interesting idea to hear that when you get it out of your head and you actually have to, I wouldn't say vocalize it, but if you have to write it down and make it concrete, that does make the thing seem a lot smaller. Because why are you upset? Because of this.
And you start to train yourself that I don't need to think about this anymore because I've already got it on my to-do list, or I've already got it written down, or I've already got it at this place where I know that I'm not going to forget about it. So I don't need to keep coming back to it. I don't need to keep dwelling on it because, you know, that is in some way scheduled or in some way noted that I'm going to come back to it. So therefore, I don't need to worry about that now. You know, that again, that doesn't work for everything. If you're really fretting about, you know, a job application or something like that you're just waiting for, then that's a different situation. But if it's, you know, a problem that you keep coming back to or something that you keep dwelling on, I think that can really help. And especially if you get in the habit of doing that, then really your mind sort of gets used to it. And you might find it a lot easier to really kind of push those things out of your consciousness and relax a little bit.
Yeah, I've always found that writing with my hand is always the better way to go. I tried to write it on a computer or something. Mm-hmm. That still doesn't stick to me. I guess I'm too old for typing to be the same kind of thing. But at least I have a record. I have a whole Evernote notebook of, like, every year on my birthday, I do an assessment. I'm like, okay, are you better off than you were a year ago? And if you're not, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. Do you do anything similar?
No, I don't actually. I used to back when I was in, you know, doing computer science and computer programming. You know, I had very clear career goals and I knew exactly where I wanted to go. And I was very much tracking ahead of my goals and doing great as a software architect, and everything was going great. But then I made this huge, huge career change where I went from, you know, doing UML designs for 14 hours a day to doing journalism and writing about tablets and cars and stuff like that. That was quite a while ago now, but I still haven't really gotten comfortable, I guess, with this new space that I've moved into, to the point where I'm really sitting down and thinking about exactly where I want to be in a couple of years. But in general, you know, I have kind of set myself with very broad goals about, you know, cutting back on travel, being home a bit more. You know, I'm getting into bicycle racing this year, which is something that I've wanted to do for a while, but I just never really made the time for it before. So kind of general quality of life things I do try to improve upon. But no, I don't actually do kind of an annual assessment. That's something I should do.
Well, you talked about exercise there. You're going to go bicycling. I know that you work out regularly. What role do you find that with keeping yourself mentally fit? Because for myself, I know if I don't work out, I will be a monster. It's really important if I just taking a walk, just do something physical, or it just doesn't work for me. What role does exercise have in your, I guess, calmness?
I don't know that the act of exercising really helps me to be calm, but I do know that if I don't exercise, I get fat. And if I'm fat, I'm not happy. So this is one of those things where, you know, I hate to keep saying the word perspective, but, you know, to me, I was very fat as a kid, and that was hugely problematic for me because I got picked on all the time. That, you know, made me very stressed, and I hated it. So I lost a lot of weight going through school and into college, and was much happier with everything. And then getting out of college, I immediately gained 40 pounds again just because I wasn't paying attention, and immediately started kind of getting frustrated with myself and hating myself. So I worked really hard to get that off again. And, you know, I told myself that I'll never forget that. I'll never forget the mistake that I made and how hard it was for me to recover from that again and how it made me feel. So, you know, I get up every morning at 5:30 and I'm either on my bike or I'm doing weights or I'm doing, you know, Insanity or something like that, just to keep the weight off, because I know that if I let myself get fat, then I'm going to be very frustrated with myself and that's not going to improve my quality of life. So it's one of those things that I don't enjoy doing necessarily, but I do because I know that in the long run, it's going to make me happier.
That's interesting, because I was a very heavy kid as well. I was incredibly heavy. I lost a lot of weight during high school. What was that?
The parallels continue. This is creepy.
Yeah, I had no idea. You seem like such. I always figured you were just a trim kid for like forever. But yeah, I was a really heavy kid, and I had a blood test when I was like 13. They're like, "Well, your cholesterol is 238. Like 240 is like a heart attack. So yeah, you might want to do something about that." Mm-hmm. So I started exercising a lot, and I lost some weight in high school. And obviously, I'm growing up at the same time, so you just kind of your weight's going every which way because you're getting taller. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in college, I dropped weight because I was in Boston, so I walked everywhere. But in law school, when I went to law school, I gained a lot of weight because it's a lot of reading, and all a lot of the reading is you're sitting there, you're just kind of snacking, and it just causes this weight gain. How the heck are you when you were a software guy? How did you not manage to continue to gain weight? Because that seems like – I know when I work on websites, because I do that regularly, I just end up snacking. And I just have to like not do that. How do you not do that?
Yeah. My problem was when I got out of school, I graduated kind of at the tail end of the dot-com boom. So I got a consulting job where I was traveling all over the place. And so that meant eating at restaurants all the time. And it meant working 18 to 20-hour days, which meant, you know, there was no time for fitness. There was no time – you know, I was staying in hotels, so I didn't even have a scale. So I really had – it was one of those things where after a year I'd gained 40 pounds and I had really no idea. And it really took about a year for it to sink in that I had really gained a lot of weight. And I was very, very upset with myself. So at that point, I just kind of made a commitment to exercise every day. And really, you know, I do try to watch what I eat in terms of calorie count because I unfortunately have a metabolism that's not very helpful in that regard. But, you know, I know how much exercise that I need to do to burn off enough calories so that I can eat decently and not gain weight. But really for me it's just a matter of doing enough hard exercise to burn off the stuff so that I can kind of relax and enjoy the foods that I want to enjoy.
Yeah, I know I'm harping a lot on exercise for a peace show, and there's a reason why. I was reading a book called Rewire Your Brain by Dr. John Arden, and one of the biggest things this guy sticks to is this idea of exercise and basically its chemical effect on your brain. Because it is going to make you relax a little bit. Not only that, because you'll be able to physically do things that you wouldn't be able to. You usually feel better about that. I have a young son, and I want to be able to chase him around. So if I'm that big, fat dad who's sitting in a corner chair, and I'm not like, oh, yeah, kid, do whatever you're doing, that just isn't the same kind of experience as being able to do things like pick up your kid or run after him. So it's all kind of tied together for me particularly pretty hard because my dad, and this is an odd part of the show because I get to actually talk about me, is that my dad died at the age of 53 and he had a heart attack and there was a second heart attack. And he wasn't really around much when I was growing up because he was working so hard. And I wanted to avoid that very much so because I'm like, okay, what's going to make me happy? Don't do what my dad did. Be around, be able to chase around my kid and also do what I can. So it's, you know, it's been a bit of a crazy ride and there's much more to my story when it comes to that stuff. But that's one of the reasons why I think exercise is actually kind of, it's in hand with happiness because you need to be able to do the things you want to do. I mean, unless you just want to sit around and that's your goal of happiness. But do you have a definition of happiness for yourself? Like what makes you content?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know that I have one good definition of happiness, but I think you know, for me, happiness would be the absence of worry or the absence of doubt or the absence of frustration. So a lot of things that I do are very much with that in mind. You know, I recently became a vegetarian, not because of this, you know, this health concerns or anything like that, but just because I found myself, for whatever reason, you know, the idea of killing animals and eating them was really bothering me, which is weird because when I grew up in Vermont, my grandfather had a cattle ranch and I was there all the time. And, you know, I used to help him load up the cattle to go off to auction. And I knew exactly where they were going and what they were headed for. And, you know, I used to chase around the chickens and so that their heads could get cut off. You know, as a kid, that never bothered me. But getting older, it sort of did to the point where if I was eating a cheeseburger or eating something like that, you know, it wasn't like I was dwelling on the fact that this came from an adorable cow that was standing in a field a couple of months ago. But it was the kind of thing that was sort of just tickling in the back of my mind. So I made that decision just because, you know, I didn't really want that bit of doubt in my mind. And I do a lot of things where I just try to make simple changes in my life to get rid of any frustration and get rid of any possible pain points so that my day-to-day life can be a little bit better. So I guess in general, you know, happiness for me is not having to worry about something. And so I do, you know, everything that I can to line everything up to make things easier in that regard.
Well, how do you reconcile that with your racing then? Because that seems like the opposite. It seems like you'd be full of I wouldn't say worry, but you'd have doubt in your head, and you seem to enjoy racing. So how do you put those together?
It's interesting, you know, if you get into a lot of sports and if you start to get pretty serious about them, you know, a lot of athletes talk about being in the zone, and you can definitely get that way in a car race where you are very, you know, very aware of the present situation and you're very mindful of the present situation, but you're not really, you know, you're not necessarily worried about the present situation. You're simply kind of falling back on your instinct and your training and everything else and all the experience that you've gained. And it actually is a very sort of peaceful state to get into. Now, obviously, if I screw up and I run into a snowbank or something like that, then that pretty quickly kicks me out of that state of mind. But in general, you know, you can definitely get yourself into kind of a calm state when you're doing that kind of thing, which is interesting. But for me, the other good thing about racing is, again, you know, if you're somebody who kind of craves speed and you're driving down the road, you're probably going to want to be driving faster than you should be driving, and that then could cause stress because you're constantly worried about looking for cops, or you're getting a speeding ticket and you just got pulled over. And those are, again, stressful situations. But if you go out and you do racing of some sort, you can kind of get that out of your system a bit, so you can go out and go really fast in a controlled environment where you don't have to worry about getting a ticket or whatever. And then when you're driving home, you know, at that point, you were just going 100 miles an hour on the track or whatever, so it doesn't really matter whether you're going 65 or 70 on the highway because, you know, they pretty much feel the same at that point.
It's funny that your definition of happiness is to be without worry or to be like at least minimizing that. For me, I found out that when I'm without worry, I pretty much get bored. So I need to have that. And I found out when I would start doing more and more new experiences, doing things that were unfamiliar, it was that unfamiliarity and I guess maybe even the potential for failure actually made me excited, which made me happy, which I thought was very odd. Because once I finally realized that pattern, because why did that doesn't make any sense to me. Because I know when I was younger, that pattern arises anytime you ask out a girl. And I hated doing that because I would freak out and it would go badly. So I have no idea why in my older age, I'm just like, yes, the excitement of potential rejection and failure will make me feel better.
I can definitely relate to that. I mean, doing new things, I think it's the spice of life, as it were, which is a terrible cliche. But ultimately, you know, trying out new things and indeed failing at them at times is part of the experience. But yeah, I enjoy learning new things and trying new sports. I mean, this whole bicycle thing is a new thing for me. I always loved riding bikes as a kid, but to be actually serious about entering in races this year and, you know, getting my ass handed to me by a bunch of guys who've been training for years and years is a different experience altogether. But, you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. I'm going to learn some things. It'll be a new experience. You know, I like to travel to new places whenever I can. And I do think that's important stuff, too, and when it comes to improving your quality of life. So, yeah, I guess there's a, you know, some sort of a dividing line between making my day-to-day life better, where I'm just going to hang around the house and, you know, enjoying what I have. And then, yeah, going out and doing new things, I think is a very, very important thing as well.
Well, how do you prioritize that kind of stuff? I mean, I know sometimes I should be reading a book and then I end up on Reddit, and that's a mistake because I'll be stuck on Reddit for like half an hour. But today I was strong enough to close my iPad and open a book, an actual physical dead tree book, just because I wanted to learn again. I was like, oh, yeah, I learned this material before. I can read it again. Mm-hmm. How do you prioritize what you're doing?
That's tough. I mean, I definitely have strong goals for myself, and you know there are a lot of things that I want to do in terms of, you know, life experiences that I want to have and that kind of thing. And I kind of have like a timeline, a very informal timeline, where there are things that I want to do by a certain age, just to make sure that I've had the opportunity to do them. But in general, you know, I think it's just a matter of being aware of how much time you're spending at a given thing and whether that thing is a productive thing or not. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with sitting on the couch and cruising Reddit for an hour or two. You know, if you're just relaxing, if you've had a long day and you need to just kind of unwind for a while. But you know, you have to, I guess, get aware of if you're doing that for 3 days in a row and that's all that you've been doing and you haven't been doing anything but doing that and eating Cheetos at the same time. Maybe it's time to get up and do something else. But you know, I think there can be a lot of joy in lethargy. There can be a lot of joy in being a couch potato for sure. But it, you know, all things in moderation, I guess, is the best way to say it.
I think you just created a new show there, by the way, Joy and Lethargy. I think that
we can all sit around and discuss which fried foods are most delicious and which websites
like,
are
you travel,
the best way to waste time.
Well, you wouldn't travel to fairs to find these deep fried Twinkies. I guess they'd come to you because you're being lethargic.
Yeah, it'd have to be things that can be delivered in one way or another. It'd have to be delivered.
Or checking out couches, best couches. I don't know.
You know, I don't. I actually, you know, legitimately, I don't think there is a site out there that has a strong focus on, you know, on the lazy life, as it were. There's certainly plenty of websites out there about, you know, getting out and running a marathon or doing anything like that. But I don't think – I haven't come across anything that's, you know, about quality of life for couch potatoes. And that's probably a pretty lucrative opportunity right there.
You know, finding the couch that has the built-in power supply for your laptop, the tablet stand, the refrigerator that's on the side. So, yeah, so if you're watching this and this will bring you peace, yeah, then you guys can do that. I don't think I'm going to be going – I have a feeling the producer of that show is going to have to work really hard to do that, which is the opposite of the program.
You can just kick your royalty checks our way. You know, we'll only take 10% or so. So
no,
just take
the idea.
Right
there. let's see. I've been always trying to figure out in the past couple of days. I've been reading a lot of I read a lot of self-help books because why not? I'm not exactly into fiction. What kind of books do you read? Do you read a lot of fiction, nonfiction?
Yeah, I definitely read a lot. I read mostly fiction. I tend to read I force myself to read mostly authors who I think have great voices because I think that, you know, as a writer, it doesn't really matter what kind of writing you're doing, but you're heavily influenced by what you write. So, you know, I try to, you know, at least 9 out of 10 books that I read are because I have great respect for the tone or the style of the author. So I read a lot of random stuff. You know, I read a lot of Proust. I read a lot of Vonnegut. I read Pynchon. I read stuff from authors who I think have great voices. But, you know, I don't really read a lot of self-help stuff. I have read quite a few books on Buddhism just because that's a topic that fascinates me. And I've recently was just given a book on you know, vegetarian eating for athletes, which is, of course, a very relevant thing for me right now as I'm trying to find every source of protein that I can, which is a bit of a new life challenge for me. But no, in general, I tend to read fiction and I tend to read stuff that that I can kind of embrace the language of, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I can see that. My fiction works. I just like to watch movies. I'll watch fiction. For some reason, I can hardly read it anymore. When I was a kid, I was a comic book guy. That's, I guess that's fiction, right? So I could read that all the time. Yeah. But at some point, I just broke. And I'm like, I can't. I think this is instilled from my dad. Because he would always say, like, so wait, you went to a movie, you've wasted 2 hours. I'm like, that's not a waste of time. Like, I think it's something. Although I did catch him watching his share of movies. So you know, being productive was very important in growing up for me. You know, if you guys don't know, my parents were immigrants. So they came from Pakistan. And in that culture, it's very much be a lawyer or be a doctor, or you're not our kid. So that would be why I have a law degree. And that's how I ended up in tech. See how that works out? Because I did what I wanted, but I did what they wanted at the same time. And that worked out.
Trying to make everybody
happy. I'm assuming you didn't have the same parental pressure, Tim.
No, I mean, growing up in Vermont, if you don't get somebody pregnant before you're 15 and work at the gas station, then you've done pretty good for yourself.
Cumberland Farms? You know,
yeah, no, I don't know that we had too many Cumbies, but a lot of local gas stations and that sort of thing. Where I have, you know, friends who are, you know, have great families and they're very happy doing that. So I don't mean to be in any way disparaging, but that was, you know, that was something that that I was pretty much sprung out of at a pretty young age when we moved to New York, and suddenly it was, you know, this massive school where pretty much everything was open to me. You know, every career path that I could imagine. And I'd always had a love for computers, and I always have a love for writing. And I, you know, I tried to find some way of kind of merging the two together. But no, I mean, I'm very lucky. My mother's very happy with how I've turned out, as it were. I don't know that they had any specific directive in mind for me, just to not be a total failure. And I think I've done okay in that regard. So, but no, I didn't really have that much pressure. My parents were always very supportive of pretty much anything that I wanted to do, which was great.
That's really helpful, and because I think the way I was raised is influenced. The way I'm raising my son is because he likes My Little Ponies, that television show. He's 3 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I don't quite like it. I know there's a bunch of people who do like this program. Grown men love this program. And I can't judge and just be like, okay, look, if you like this show, you like this show. But I know my folks are probably, you know, raise an eyebrow of like, why is this young boy watching this effectively very girly show? It's like, who cares? It's just a show. It's colorful.
I used to play Barbies with my sister, and I think I turned out okay. So, yeah, I don't think there's any reason to to be concerned there. But, you know, if anything, that's kind of given you a very valuable perspective of you know, what that form of parenting can do to a kid. And so now you've got a great perspective and you can, you know, be a little bit perhaps more understanding with your son, which is great. And hopefully, you know, encourage them to follow their dreams. And but, you know, I can't imagine the challenge of, you know, walking that very fine line between encouraging and motivating your kid and kind of being a little bit too overbearing and a little bit too domineering. That's a fine line and a big challenge. So I salute you, sir.
It's a challenge. Parenting is definitely a challenge because you want to be friendly. You want to be able to explain something. But when they learn the magic word, why, you just no longer want to use reason. You want to just put an end to it. And that is why.
Because I said so. Mm-hmm.
Becomes the answer. Exactly, because you're just like, okay, I'm finished talking to you, little human being. I need to continue to exist right now. But that's actually another. I'm going to say a lot more about my dad. He would always take my questions seriously, no matter how dumb they were. I asked him one day when I was about like 13. I didn't really mean anything negative by this, but I did ask him. He was about the age of 40 something. I go, Dad, what's it like to be old? And he looked at me. He goes, It's not bad. You know, there's a lot of responsibilities, and he explained what it is to be an adult. And I was just kind of like, great. My older brother took this as an insult, apparently. He's like, why are you asking Dad that question? I'm like, because I want to know. What? It's like, what difference does it make? Why are you even interjecting? It's because he didn't think that was respectful. I didn't think of it as a negative. I just really wanted to know. And that's something I think is really important. If you look at every question as if it's legitimate. So like if you get a weird question, I'm sure Tim, you've probably had to deal with a lot of bizarre interactions over the years. Mm-hmm. How do you not get thrown for a loop?
I think it's definitely difficult, but I think the most important thing is to try to find out from what direction the question is coming from. You know, what sort of background does this person have that they're asking this question? You know, what angle are they coming at you from? What are they trying to get out of you? You know, in this industry, we get interviewed from time to time, and sometimes they're simply trying to find out information from you. Sometimes they're just trying to get you to say something. So, you know, it's a little bit of gamesmanship in some cases, but in general, you know, I tend to look at every question as being a simple, honest question, and I try to give a simple, honest answer. But I found myself asking a lot of questions in general. You know, I've been lucky I haven't had to do too many job interviews lately, but back in the day when I did do job interviews, because, you know, the software industry was a little bit tumultuous, so you're always kind of bouncing around. I always found myself asking more questions than the interviewer did, just because I wanted to make sure that I understood exactly what they were asking me. And I found in that regard, actually made the interviews go very, very easily, because in the form of asking more questions, they would more or less, in one way or another, give you the answer that they were looking for, or at least pretty well frame it so that it would be a pretty easy question. So, you know, in general, I guess I always make sure that I'm crystal clear on exactly what they're looking for. But I tend to just try to figure out exactly where they're coming from and give a good answer that relates to that.
When it comes to trying to be happy, I guess in the active pursuit of being happy, I know I've had to make a lot of hard decisions. I've had to move across the country. I've decided that was the best route for me. A whole bunch of, you know, bizarre moves when it comes to where I went to school, how I went through school, and what else I would do. What do you think is, I mean, there's a lot of fear involved in these kinds of things. Have you found yourself in any situation where you were afraid to make a jump that you knew that would make you happy in the long run, but in the interim, you will go, okay, this could be either a disaster or it will work out really well, but I think I'm 51% sure this is going to work.
Yeah, absolutely. The ultimate example is when I took over Engadget. You know, I was still kind of flirting with the software career. I was doing doing some software consulting, so I still had my foot in that pool. I hadn't quite given up on my consulting career, so I could still go back to that if I wanted to. But here was this opportunity at Engadget to take over the site, basically to become the editor-in-chief. I'd kind of applied for that position, not thinking necessarily that I was going to get it, but I thought that I was capable of doing a good job anyway, so I applied for it. And as it turns out, I was given the opportunity to take the job. And so here was, you know, this great huge turning point in my life where I could leave the software industry, which I loved, and make a huge career path change and go into the world of journalism, which is another very tumultuous industry for a variety of reasons. And not only that, but to take over a website in which, if you know the story of Engadget, you know that a lot of the senior editors were leaving at that time to form their own site, which was to become Engadget's biggest competition. And so, I knew right then that I was either going to do a good job here and I was going to save Engadget and it was going to continue to be a respected tech site, or I was going to screw the pooch basically. And that would mean that my career was going to be over. Nobody would want to hire the guy who sabotaged Engadget. But in doing so, I would be stepping away from this other successful career that I had. That was a hugely risky thing, but it was something that I simply felt like, it was too good of an opportunity for me to not take. It was something that I felt like I needed to do. I had huge respect for the Engadget brand, and I wanted to take it over, and I wanted to do the best that I could, and I did. The question of happiness, though, that's what gives me a bit of pause, because for the next 2.5 years, I would be pretty much raking myself over the coals every day to do everything I could to make sure that the site stayed healthy, which was not an easy thing. But in the end, I'm proud of what I did, and I think I did the best that I possibly could. And in the end, I think that the site was still respected. So I believe that I accomplished my goals in that regard. So I can look back on that in terms of happiness. But there were certainly plenty of tough times along the way.
Yeah, when you're in the middle of it, it's kind of like, this is horrible. But when you look back on it, again, this is perspective, same thing.
Absolutely,
Yeah, I've made a lot of career moves, so I'm very aware of how that feels. This is an idea.
Yeah,
it's a bad idea.
For me, that's probably the ultimate perspective thing, because in the throes of it, again, I wasn't thinking career, I wasn't thinking future. I honestly had no idea what one could do after that role, and I had no thought, no foresight, no idea of what was going to be coming next. It was just something that felt right at the time. As it turns out, it worked out just fine.
Yeah, a lot of folks and a lot of books I was reading years ago, they were talking about this idea, if you're not going to ever live your dreams. So let's say your dream is to live on a beach in Hawaii and or you're going to take this vacation one day, one day I'll be happy. If you think of it that way, you're never going to be happy. It's not until you actually start doing those things, the question becomes, well, when are you going to do it? And why aren't you doing it right now? And so for a lot of people, that means they have to give up something really comfortable to try something new. And that's uncertainty and it's fear. And that weird pit in your stomach gets acted up. And you're like, ugh, this could be weird. But what are you waiting for? That's usually the question that these books keep throwing in your face. And it's this inevitability aspect. And so that kind of fear keeps a lot of people from achieving a lot of the weird stuff. Because I know I've gotten a lot of questions about my age at times. People are like, wait, how old are you? I'm like, 34. They go, you did this stuff? I'm like, yeah, because what else are you going to do? I mean, you're just going to sit around as a middle manager all day and just kind of be like, oh, great. I really do hate this 8-hour block of day, but at least I get to come home. Like, what's the point of doing that? Anyway, so I'm just blathering on. You have any last words of encouragement for the viewers or thoughts you'd like to share?
Not to beat on the dead horse, but I think perspective and being realistic about things is very important. I mean, we all have overarching dreams and goals of things that we'd love to do. As a kid, I wanted to be a Formula One race car driver, but I was pretty realistic with the fact that was never going to happen. I tried to do things in my life that would get me to a place where I would be happy. And I try to be realistic with what's possible and what's not possible. And in general, I think, like you were just saying, if you can make some goals for yourself and set a path for yourself, I think that's very important. But I think being mindful of the situation that you're in is very important, too. And I think the meditation is a great way to do that. There are a lot of great resources online for kind of learning mindfulness and learning meditation. And if that really will help you to find the internal quiet that you kind of need to get the perspective that you need, to really realize the sort of situation that you're in. I think that's the most important thing, is to be able to step away from the situation that you're in, to get yourself out of whatever frustrating or whatever difficult situation that you're in for just a couple of moments so you can really get some perspective. If you can't get the perspective, then you're going to have a real hard time finding the solution. So I think that's it.
Yeah, on the perspective front, there was in a book I read, it's called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff by, I think it's Richard Carlson. One of the little chapters heading is, everything that's ever happened to you has already happened. And that statement kind of took me aback because, yeah, you know, you might have had a bad hour that's just happened or a bad experience, you know, a year ago. But that's all already gone. It's this idea that if you realize that all of this is already over or all that stuff's already over, you think about the now. That's the mindfulness thing. If folks are not familiar with mindfulness, it's this being in the now that really can give you perspective. That's one of the weird things. Like when you actually are just sitting in a chair and you're like, well, that's soft. Or like if you're just listening to birds or whatever it is, it can actually really help you out. At least in my experience, it's worked for me. You know, we don't really do promotions on the show. Do you want to promote anything, Tim? Like,
Well, there's this really great website online that you might have heard of called cnet.com, which is really probably not going to help you in terms of mindfulness, but a lot of great information on there anyway, which it's a site that we can both relate to. But in terms of, you know, plugging stuff, nope, absolutely not. It's other than this podcast, which you should listen to every week.
That's right. cnet.com, huh? That's an interesting place to work, I hear.
Yes, it's great to have you on the team.
It's great to have you on the team. I guess that pretty much does it for us. And I think I said something last week with something. I just read some random line. It was, without balance, there's no strength, that kind of thing. So just try to find balance in your life. That's really, I think, the big key. And I think today's episode had this like theme of perspective. And that really, it does take a long time to develop perspective, but keep at it. You'll realize it. And then you'll go, hey, wait, that wasn't so bad. Like when you started the show, everyone's like, this show is going to suck. And at the end, they knew it did. So no, they didn't suck because Tim was on. I'm sorry about that, Tim. I didn't mean to insult you.
It's going to suck because Tim Stevens is coming on. Thanks.
It's going to really suck. No, it didn't suck at all. I was just making a joke. And I don't have a sign off, so bye.